Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we're going to be talking about another Bears loss. I know this is new for everybody. We're going to be talking about some big moves from the White Sox and the Cubs, and maybe a little hockey and basketball if we get to that. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the Stars of Tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season's going on right now, and you should head on over to icehogs.com and do some Christmas shopping and buy some, for the people you love, some hat shirts, t-shirts, season tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Oh, Alex. You know, I think we all knew the Bears were going to lose this game. Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were, what, a 9-point underdog, something ridiculous like that?
And the fact that they kept it this close, you know, for whatever reason, feels like somewhat of a moral victory.
I thought they fought really well today. Honestly, I was pretty surprised it was that close. And I know that it was cold. I also know that the Eagles were coming off a division game against the Giants and then look forward to their biggest rival in the Cowboys next week. So it's easy to look at this and say, okay, it's probably a trap game for the Eagles. But I thought there were things that the Bears did surprisingly well today. And you know what? Okay, whatever. I mean, I thought it was going to be a much worse game than this.
Oh, absolutely. You know, as an FYI, I missed most of the game. My daughter had a dance recital today, so I missed most of the game, and I watched replay of it, or I watched little bits of it on my phone. So I missed a few things like the Tevin Jenkins injury, but you know, overall, I didn't think the Bears played terribly bad. There was moments that where you can pinpoint that, hey, this is why they lost.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, you know, going against the team that's got the best record in football, they're playing incredibly well. They're the odds on favorite to win the Super Bowl. And I thought that the Bears played pretty well.
Yeah. And you know what? If you look at the game, your big takeaway is really the only loss here was the Tevin Jenkins injury. And, you know, Sam Bourne was banged up too. The Tevin Jenkins injury really is bad news for the Bears. And you saw immediately the difference it made on the offensive line. In the first half, Justin Fields got sacked 5 times. He was constantly under pressure because he went down on the first drive of the game, did Tevin Jenkins. Mm-hmm. It was like maybe 4 or 5 plays in, and he had to be carried off on a stretcher, and it was a neck injury. That's really freaking scary. And you knew that there was going to be a big difference in this game without Tevin Jenkins against an elite team like the Eagles, and you saw it right away. That's really the thing you look at this game and be like, man, that really freaking sucks. But if I'm going to give some credit, I got to say, Kyler Gordon, he came back and he probably had his best game as a Bear today. I think the secondary played really, really well today for what they were up against. Because, you know, there were times when Jalen Hurts threw down the field towards the sideline and completed a pass that was well covered, well played. It was just as perfectly placed of a ball as you can get. And there were other times where they prevented that pass from being completed, whether it was deflected away, whether they just couldn't turn around and make the catch, could the receiver, and they even picked him off a few times. I got to give a lot of credit to the Bears secondary today. I thought they played pretty well, you know, compared to what they were up against.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think the secondary for the last several weeks has played, they've played pretty well. I mean, even with Brisker and Gordon being out, I think Jalon Jones has played well. Jalon Johnson.
He had a great game, Jalon Johnson.
Yeah, I think Jalon Jones had a pretty good game too. Jalon Johnson had a great game. I think if anything, he put some big boy pants on this game.
Yeah, he should be really happy with himself. He had a hell of a game.
Yeah, I mean, normally Jalon Johnson doesn't, he just takes the one side. He doesn't follow the best receiver, and he followed Brown the whole game, and they went at it. And you know what? Brown had a couple of really spectacular catches, but that the coverage, like you said earlier, the coverage couldn't have been any better. They were just absolutely perfect throws and great catches. And, you know, sometimes it's just, things are not defensible. And I mean, Jalon Johnson covered him like a blanket.
Yeah.
And there was some really fantastic pass breakups and coverage there. So I'm really happy with the way he played and really stepped up.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? The fact that you were able to get multiple turnovers today, I mean, twice. You picked off Jalen Hurts twice. I would not have bet the over on like one interception, because like you could go into this game and be like, okay, it is cold. You know, there is the possibility that there's a tipped ball or whatever, but I didn't see multiple interceptions from Jalen Hurts this game. I'm like, you know what? It's cold. If they control the game, they're probably just going to run the ball a lot. But, you know, that wasn't the case. They got some turnovers. They made a lot of big plays on defense. I mean, you gave up 25 points. This is a team that dropped way more than that against plenty of other teams.
You know, the defensive front got some pass rush today.
They did.
You know, not elite level of pass rush, not the pass rush you need to be a competitive, you know, a playoff caliber team, but they've gotten way more pass rush than they have since they traded Robert Quinn. It's been probably the most pass rush. And so I don't know what happened during the bye week, but they really did step that up. The defensive backs played well. It was on defense. I mean, they did about as much as you can ask for against this team, especially with some short fields and, you know, I mean, they had several short fields. I would say, if anything, the Achilles heel was stopping the run. And there was a big third down conversion when they had their backs to their own end zone, where the Bears decided to do a corner blitz. And
yeah,
that was a huge play. But, yeah, you know, mostly I would say it was the inability to stop the run, and some of the, you know, and not consistent pass rush, you know, that ultimately really was the difference there. And, you know, going from 17 points to 25 points.
Yeah. And I think another thing too, is you saw the Eagles make a couple of big plays where they just, in one play, they ate up 40 some yards, and that would just set them up in an easier spot to score. I also think a big difference in this game was the play towards the end of the first half, where, you know, everyone was covered, but Jalen Hurts had nothing but green grass in front of him, and he just took off and ran for the end zone completely untouched.
Yeah. You know, Jack Sanborn played a great game. You know, I'm starting to believe that maybe he is.
Believe, man, he's looked pretty damn good. You remember that tackle he had to take down Jalen Hurts where he brought him down by the ankles?
Yeah.
That was a huge play.
I'm starting to be a believer in Jack Sanborn.
Yeah, I think the dude's got some skill. I've really enjoyed watching him. I mean, he's everywhere. You see him where when he's on the field, he gets to the play, he gets to the ball. It's really, really impressive to watch. I think that today is the type of game where you can say, you know what? Even though we stripped a lot of our team down to the studs, we do have guys on the defensive side of the ball going forward. You need a hell lot more. Like, don't get this mixed up. You need a lot more. But I think you can look at this secondary overall and being like, you know what? We got a nice core here. And Jack Sanborn might be a nice core piece on that end of the defense too, even though you need a hell lot more. At least you could say, okay, we have pieces here. Even though we traded away Roquan Smith. And replacing him is not going to be necessarily easy, but if this is who Jack Sanborn is, then, you know, you got to take that. That's for a good value too.
Yeah, I mean, look at what it is that the winning teams, the best teams pay. They pay high dollar amounts to the premium positions. And an off-ball linebacker is not a premium position where you can pay guys. And I understand. You're like, well, you got to pay your best players. Fair. That's a fair thing. But, you know, you have to be able to wisely spend the money. You know, if you pay everybody top dollar, then when you get time to pay Justin Fields a new contract, you wind up then in a financial pickle.
Yeah. I think the other thing we have to look at too, with this defense and what they're spending here, is it's like, you know what? You have Eddie Jackson on the veteran contract, but Kyler Gordon and Jaquan Brisker, they're both rookies in year one of their deal. So they have a number of years left where they're going to be on their rookie deal.
Yep.
No, just as core pieces.
Mm-hmm. You know, you really do need like 10 to 15 blue chip players to really be able to compete for a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And let's see. I would say Jalen Johnson is one, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think Brisker and Gordon are becoming them. Brisker much closer to being that blue chip player.
I agree.
I think Eddie Jackson was a blue chipper prior to the injury, the way he was playing.
Yeah, that injury really sucked.
You know, you lost one with Roquan. Jack Sanborn is starting to play like one. We'll see how he progresses. But nobody on the defensive line is a blue chip.
No.
On offense, you've got Justin Fields, David Montgomery. Do you have any other blue chippers there?
I would say Tevin Jenkins.
We'll see how. I mean, does anybody know the extent of this injury?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, could this injury change the outlook of the Bears offseason?
And is it possible? I mean, this could just be me being hopeful, but could it be that this is a not terribly serious injury, but because it was head and neck, they dealt with it with super precaution?
I hope. I really hope, because he's so important. And if this injury is serious, then you might have to adjust a few things on how you approach this offseason, because I know we've said that the line has held up decently in recent weeks, but that was really with Tevin Jenkins in there. With him out of there, it gets exposed. It really does.
You know, we talked about the offensive line, and, you know, it's a constant evolution. as the weeks go on, as players get hurt. I think Braxton Jones has shown enough that he should be given, you know, you could probably count him as somebody that you're going to build around on the offensive line. Does that mean he's going to be elite? Does that mean he's definitely not elite now? There's definitely things he has to work on.
Mm-hmm. But
for being a fifth round rookie out of a small school, I think we've seen a whole lot. And the thing that he's not good at, which is defending against the bull rush, is based on where he was drafted and what school he came from and how young he is. That's the thing that if he had a weakness, I would want it to be, because that's the easiest thing to work on, is building the strength. You can't build more quickness or athleticism or bend. You know, those are your characteristics of who you are as a player. So Braxton Jones, I think, is going to be the left tackle next year. I'm starting to worry about Cody Whitehair.
That was probably his. I mean, I don't know exactly in his career, but that was as bad as we've seen him struggle in a while. I think today he was getting bull rushed and beat and run over.
And what we saw today was a product of some of the injuries and replacements too, is not only were guys getting beat one-on-one, but the lack of communication on that line was really bad.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stunts and twists that guys not making the switch. It was real bad. And as a veteran, Whitehair shouldn't be part of that. So I think the problem is, like, all right, you can cut Whitehair, save a lot of money, but it's one of those things, is his contract is not the worst.
No, and it's not.
And you have to replace a whole bunch of other pieces. I think he's going to get a pass just because the sheer number of positions. You definitely need to upgrade at center.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what happens with Tevin Jenkins, if this turns out to be more precautionary and there's no long-term injury, all right, I think we can pencil in Tevin Jenkins at right guard next year. But that right tackle spot, I was really hoping that Alex Leatherwood would step up and look decent. And he got beat like a rented mule today. Maybe you try kicking him into the guard spot. And at least, you're not going to play Tevin Jenkins. Wait, you're not going to play Tevin Jenkins next week, right?
No, you're not. No.
So you got to put somebody there. Michael Schofield is terrible. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
We know Michael Schofield's terrible. Like, that's just a fact. Can we maybe then possibly kick in Alex Leatherwood and then put Borum or Riley Reiff back at right tackle, and then just see, is Alex Leatherwood's going to give us anything there?
Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus are using, you know, popsicle sticks and gum and tape trying to put this together.
I mean, you gotta try everybody everywhere at this point and see what sticks. I mean, if Alex Leatherwood lays guard, okay, all right, then maybe he's your solution at the other guard position. And then, you know, you just need to solve right tackle and center. But if he can't play there either, then you're starting to look at, right tackle, center, and another guard position, possibly. There's a lot to work on. That offensive line was brutal today.
Yeah, it was. It really was. I mean, Justin Fields didn't have any time in the pocket. He had to move out a lot, and it was rough because not only did you not have time to throw today, but you didn't have Darnell Mooney. You didn't have N'Keal Harry. You didn't have Chase Claypool. And Equanimeous St. Brown made one catch and then got hurt and was out for the game. So you were down to pretty much nothing.
Yeah, you were playing Simba Webster and you were playing
Dante Valus Pettis
Jones and Valus Jones.
Oh, yeah. You know, the Valus Jones thing, I really wanted him to work out, but he can't lose fumbles every single week. Like that fumble today was bad.
That was bad. That was real bad. And I'm not writing him off yet, but I'm not optimistic that he's going to amount to anything.
I mean, if you could just, if he was reliable on special teams, that would be fine. Like that's one of the problems too, is we've seen him with the bad fumbles on special teams. If he could properly field on special teams, you could be like, all right, he's our return man. You know, we're not going to use him much in the offense. We're going to have him as a special teams guy. Fine. But we saw struggles on both ends so far.
And part of the problem is, and this is trying to give him somewhat of the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he can't play. I don't know. But part of the problem is young wide receivers need time to play.
Look at
Watson from Green Bay. Is he was a higher draft pick than Valus Jones.
Yeah, with much higher upside.
And much higher upside. Like he was a guy that everyone was like second round pick, and he was. And he's playing with a Hall of Fame quarterback, and the fans of Green Bay were ready to run him out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a starter playing, you know, most snaps until finally things started to click. It takes time for young wide receivers to get acclimated. But the problem is Valus Jones just has to hold on to the ball.
Right.
That's all on him. 100% on him. You know, as much as we've seen good things from Cole Kmet, there was a play today where he had just green grass to go to the first down and got caught from behind and taken down like a yard short.
He looked like a few steps slow today. Was that just me?
No, it did. Either the Eagles are really fast or he looked slow.
One of the things that I was critical about Cole Kmet the past few years was him not being able to out-muscle guys. And I feel like we saw a much better version of Cole Kmet throughout this year, but today it felt more like that last year Cole Kmet, where he just looked slower, wasn't able to break any tackles, wasn't able to really get any more yards after the catch. It wasn't his best game today. And, you know, I don't want to be too hard on him because I do like what he's done overall as a whole this year, but yeah, he looked a few steps behind today.
Oh, absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. And, you know, hopefully that's a product of the cold weather.
Yeah.
And playing a really good team.
Yeah. It's a tough matchup. You know, it is. And like you said, it was freezing out there.
Yeah, that was rough. You saw very little from the wide receivers because you are down to the bare bones. Offensive line terrible. Justin Fields still continues to make incredible plays.
That run today was, we've seen all those crazy runs. That was incredible.
I was screaming to my wife to run upstairs and watch that because that was one of the best plays I've ever seen.
Look at that play. Look at that play.
This guy here, he's real good.
Yeah. You know, it's like, if we could just stay on the topic of Justin Fields, it was kind of weird to evaluate him today because it was really hard for him to play with so little protection and so few wide receivers. It was
and a shoulder injury.
And a shoulder injury. And, you know, there were a few throws that he just flat out missed. And you know what? That is going to happen. It's okay. But I thought that there were three plays in particular that we should look at with Justin Fields going forward. Number one was the run. Number two were the two touchdown passes. The first touchdown pass, reading a blitz and getting that over to Dave Montgomery, that was nice to see. And then towards the end of the game, yeah, Byron Pringle is obviously all alone deep, but Justin Fields had to escape more pressure and then look downfield and then get that down to him. So I think those are three things you could look at from today and be like, all right, that's more good stuff from Justin Fields.
Yeah, I mean, you saw a lot of good things. You still saw some bad things. Like, he still has some troubles throwing out to the flat. Those are not crisp passes, and I don't know why that happens to him, but there was one drive, and it was the drive before he got hurt, where just didn't look good. There was one pass where it looked like, oh man, he threw a great one. He rolled out to his right. He threw it over one defender and in front of another one. And then it ended up being behind, I think it was Komet.
It was Komet. Yeah. I knew exactly which one you were talking about when you mentioned it.
Yeah. There was just a few misses on that drive. And then, you know, but to be fair, you're like, oh, man, look at that. Justin Fields didn't have a good drive on that. And then 2 seconds later, we're like, oh, Justin Peterman's throwing to Simba Webster. And then we realize what this offense is.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned throwing out to the flat. That is a big issue with him. And I wonder if it's a mental thing. Is he worried that just someone's going to come in there and take it?
Is it the yips?
I don't know. I speculate that it's kind of a mental adjustment that he has to make.
It's John Lester thrown to first base.
Actually, that's not a bad comparison.
I mean, it's not a hard throw, but it's a lot harder than it seems.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, I'm not saying it's easy by any means, but it is kind of funny. So maybe what he can do is he can underhand it like John Lester. Just kidding. Don't do that.
But today you just realized that this is a team that is totally rebuilding and full of injuries. And they showed a lot because they really stayed with, all the way to the end, a team that's favored to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And it seems like Jack Sanborn's injury is just an ankle. I'm sure he's going to miss some time, but
doesn't really matter that much, does it? Defense. As much as we've liked to have seen some of the things that we've seen a few weeks, I don't like seeing Sanborn hurt, but you know what? If he just needs some time to rest up, then so be it.
So it's a tough one, but the good thing is, looking at draft status, is the Denver Broncos won a game.
Huge. We control our own destiny.
We really do. So as it stands right now, the Bears, without any sort of, you know, before we talked about it, the Bears had the number two because they had more losses than everyone else because they had not had their bye week. Every team now has had their bye week.
Mm-hmm.
So every team has played the same number of games, and the Bears outright hold the number two pick in the draft. And
lose out, that number two pick is ours.
Yep. We control our own destiny, and I'm sure they're going to lose next week to Buffalo. Arizona, though, looks real bad without
Kyler Murray.
Without Kyler Murray.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They look real bad. Hopefully the Rams find a little spark with Baker Mayfield. The Colts should have had a win.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
Jeff Saturday should have had to walk home after that game. That was a big part of that loss was Jeff Saturday is a terrible head coach.
So what you're saying is a guy with absolutely no experience who was hired just to be hired didn't work.
Correct.
Wow.
And there was a time when the Colts really just needed a rundown clock.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the third quarter, rather than just run the ball and run the clock out, they had passes and kept stopping the clock. And then the Vikings were able to march down the field and get another score before the end of the quarter. You just gave them free time. Like, we all knew that the Vikings would eventually start catching up. It was, can you, as a team, run enough time down to make it so they don't have enough time to catch up to you? And that's really what you're trying to do. And they didn't do that. It was so bad.
Sounds familiar, right? Remember a certain game where it was a similar game plan with Matt Ryan, big lead?
Yeah.
That poor man.
But so the Bears are, so the Texans have the number one overall pick so far. Their record is 1-12-1.
They almost beat the Chiefs today.
They did. They're not, it's weird. They're not a good team, but they have been playing tough football. I they're another team that I think can turn it around fairly quickly. The Bears are 3-11 with the number two pick right now, but you know, it's tough. Like I don't want to say I like losing or I like when the Bears lose. I just realized that every game for the rest of the season, they have three games left, are all garbage games. Like they don't mean anything. So what is the point in winning these games?
There isn't.
It's there's nothing to win for. So when I root for them to lose, it is because the future is brighter the worse they do right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you need to build a roster, this is the best way to do it. And you need to build a roster.
You know, with that second pick, you have the better option to trade back. Because, you know, like Seattle right now would have Denver's number three pick. Seattle needs a quarterback. So
yes, they do.
They're probably going to take one, and that makes you lose leverage to trade because the people really trade the most to get the quarterback position. They might trade up for other positions, but they don't give up the premium except for quarterback. And the Colts are right there, need a quarterback. You know, if Arizona wound up ahead of the Bears, they're probably not going quarterback, so it wouldn't be that terrible. The Rams pick goes to the Lions. The Lions are a wild card. They could go quarterback, but they could not go quarterback too.
Yeah, you're hearing rumblings that they're not, but I'm not sure I fully buy that.
I have a feeling, and this is honestly not a terrible position to be in. Jared Goff has been fine for them. It's one of those things is if a quarterback fell into their lap, I think they would be stupid to not take the quarterback, especially since they have two first round picks. So if one of these, a really good quarterback falls into your lap, I think you take it, but you mm-hmm. don't trade up to get one.
Yeah.
And if you don't get one, you go, okay, you know, maybe we take a flyer on a mid round, you know, like a fourth round quarterback and develop them behind Jared Goff.
Yeah. And I mean, the way it's going, Jared Goff might get them to the playoffs. Yeah. So,
but let's see, the Colts and the Falcons are right there on the Bears' heels. They would both be after quarterbacks, Carolina after a quarterback. You know, so there's a lot of quarterback needy teams that are right on the Bears' heels. And so if you're at the Bears, I mean, look what teams give up to move up for quarterback. Look at Trey Lance. They went to move up from number 12 to number 3. The 49ers gave up the number 12 pick that year, their first rounder next year, and then the first rounder the year after that. So three first round picks for that number 3 overall pick.
Meanwhile, Purdy is lighting the world on fire.
He's been pretty solid. I mean, that is a plug and play offense. You know, you've got a really good offensive line. You've got Christian McCaffrey. They're calling the plays directly, you know, to make your life easier. You've got, you know, good wide receiver. You got George Kittle. It's a good position to be in.
Oh yeah. I mean, look at the 49ers and their success with Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo, with him, the 49ers have gotten to multiple NFC championships in a Super Bowl. He goes in many other systems. You're not getting that far.
No. So I'm not knocking Purdy, but he did step into a best case scenario.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if there is a place where you want to go and succeed in a scheme, in a system, San Francisco is one of the top places. And you know what I was saying the other week to a work buddy? We were talking about the Lions and Jared Goff. Could you imagine Jared Goff in that 49ers system?
I think he would look solid.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he'd look great. I mean, obviously not like a Pat Mahomes or anything like that, but he would look pretty dang good.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. But yeah, I mean, this Bears team needs studs. And you know what? Even if they stay in whatever pick they get, there's some good players there. The Bears have not had great success in recent memory with first round picks. So I worry that the guy they get is not going to be worthy of where they picked him.
Let's keep in mind that this is a new general manager.
Yeah, I'm just going to go through. This is over. Let's see. The Bears' first overall picks. I'm going to go backwards in time here.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, they didn't have one. The year before, Justin Fields. That's mm-hmm. looking like it's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
2020, they didn't have one. 2019, they didn't have one. 2018, Roquan Smith. Very good, but they're not having him for beyond his rookie contract, and he's not a premium position. Year before that, Mitch Trubisky did not work out. Year before that, Leonard Floyd didn't work out. Year before that, Kevin White didn't work out. Year before that, Kyle Fuller. I think that was a pretty good one.
That was a good pick.
Year before that, Kyle Long. That was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, Shea McClellan.
Mm.
Before that, Gabe Kareemi.
Mm.
Year before that, no pick. Year before that, no pick. Year before that, Chris Williams. Year before that, Greg Olsen, who did work out, just not with the Bears.
I thought he was good.
He was. They traded him away. It was so
because Martz is a jackass.
Martz is a jackass. 2006, no pick. 2005, Cedric Benson.
That was disappointing.
The number four overall pick, Cedric Benson. A year before that, Tommy Harris. I think he played well. It just had a very short career.
Yeah, he was a fine player.
And then I'm just going to rattle off a few here. Rex Grossman, Michael Haynes, Mark Colombo, David Terrell.
Colombo.
And then to round out, go back to 2000, Brian Urlacher.
Brian Urlacher, yep. That was pretty good.
Yeah. So I just worry because, you know, if they stay at the 2-3 spot and they're not able to trade back, they're probably going to end up with the line, their edge rusher from Alabama or the defensive tackle from Georgia. And both look very good. I just, are they going to wind up being elite in the NFL? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It makes me nervous putting all my eggs in one basket. If you're able to trade and get two first round picks, you feel better about things.
Knowing the Bears, their basket full of eggs is going to topple over and plop everywhere.
Yeah, there was one year that the Colts, I think it was the Colts, they had the number one and number two overall picks. And they botched both.
What year was that? That had been a while ago.
Let's see. 92.
It was obviously before Manning, right?
It was the 1992 NFL draft.
Okay. So it was before Manning.
They had the number one and number two overall picks. And it was Steve Emptman and Quentin Corriott. That was a pretty shitty draft, though. Sean Gilbert was decent. He was third pick. Desmond Howard was the fourth overall pick. He was okay. Terrell Buckley was pretty solid for the Packers. But man, that was a I'm trying to see who was the best player from this draft. Darren Woodson was 37th. Jason Hansen, the kicker, was 56th.
Oh my goodness.
This was a terrible draft. Man, was this a terrible draft. Brad Johnson, the quarterback from the Vikings, was 227th. Oof. Yeah, this was just a bad overall draft. I can't even think, like, who would they have taken? What a terrible year to have the number one and number two overall pick. And we got a fullback was drafted in the top 10.
Ooh.
Number nine overall, Tommy Bardell.
Ooh.
Oh man. Who did the Bears draft that year? Alonzo Spellman.
I don't even know who that is.
Just know that he had at the end of his tenure, he had a mental breakdown and was hospitalized in a mental hospital and escaped in the middle of winter in Chicago with no shoes or socks or shirt, just like pajama pants, and barricaded himself in, and Mike Singletary had to go and talk him out.
Are you serious?
It was a rough time in his life.
I never heard that story.
Yeah, Alonzo Spellman.
Wow.
He was like an absolute, like, physical specimen. Like, he was just a giant of a man, and didn't work out. I think he played like 5 years for the Bears, a year or so for the Cowboys. He played for the Lions 1 year, and then he was out of the league. Let's see. His first public incident was his doctor was late for an appointment, so he ripped the phone off the wall. Here we go. So he had locked himself in with a firearm, and Mike Singletary had to go persuade him to check into a mental hospital.
He's been arrested in 2008, 2015. He's been in prison. Man, that's really sad.
Yep.
Wow. I did not know this. And I know a lot of random bear shit. That's one thing I flat did not know.
I mean, I thought he was going to be really good, and he showed flashes, but just didn't work out It seemed like maybe the NFL just made things worse for him.
Yeah, that's really sad. Yeah.
But, you know, I kind of want to do a dive, and I'm going to do some research, but, I have this sinking feeling that elite defenders on the defensive line to get to the passer are mostly high draft picks. And I want to do a deep dive into that, because if that ends up being the case, you know, maybe the Bears are better off keeping that pick and drafting somebody to get to the quarterback.
Well, it's like I've said many times on this show, whether or not you trade back, I mean, if you get the second overall pick, the options are endless.
Yeah, that's the thing, is you have your pick of anybody. Sometimes you end up with when you trade back a bit, or you're in that like 10-12 draft pick area, 10-12-15. You know, the top guys are off the board, but you have a little more freedom to move around. Teams are more willing to move up because it doesn't cost as much. And nobody's going to judge you as harshly if you take a flyer on a guy that, you know, maybe the scouts or the draft nicks are saying he's a guy that's like 30th or 35th, and you take him 15th. They don't judge you as harshly as if you draft a guy at number two and they expected him to be 18 or something. And you find a lot of guys wind up having better careers, or, you know, maybe that's just anecdotal, but guys just wind up having better careers there. Maybe some of the pressure is not on as much if you're not, you know, one of the super high draft picks. But whatever it is, I think the Bears need to hit a home run.
Oh, no question. Absolutely. No. When you have as little as you have on this team, you need to hit home runs. You need to hit home runs not only to make your team better, but to install some trust within your organization. You need to hit on some of these guys.
And I see more and more people talking about Ryan Poles, knocking him for his free agent signing and his pro scouting. And I think that's unfair. I heard Spiegel talk about it today, And it just seems unfair because he didn't sign anybody that was meant to be like a marquee free agent. He signed guys low cost deals to fill out a roster to get under the cap so they could make all of these massive dead money moves to free up money for next year. That's what he did.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of frustrating at times, but you are right. I mean, the main goal of this offseason before was stripping it down to the studs. So you made moves to strip it down to the studs, basically.
Yeah, you know, I feel like he gets a pass for that. The draft, he doesn't. This draft class, he owns that. And whatever becomes is all on him.
I agree. And I absolutely agree.
And I think might not be as looking as nice as it did early on, but I think so far, I still think it was a nice draft class. But this coming off season is going to be absolutely just incredibly harshly judged because he has a whole year under his belt and he has unlimited capital to spend.
Yes. Well, yeah, exactly. And there's going to be that pressure of the Bears needing to be good because you know what? We can accept one tanking year. People are not going to accept multiple tanking years. You're just not.
No, absolutely not. And so this off season, you absolutely judge him harshly for the free agent moves he makes because these are the moves that are going to count towards winning a program because he's down to the bones. He has gotten rid of all the dead weight. He's traded away whoever he can for draft picks. This is the bottom that he's building up from. He's got to hit it right now.
Right, exactly. You've torn it down. The cellar is pretty much empty except its foundation with Justin Fields and a few other things. You got to keep building up. You can't dig further back down or not build anything. Because when you look at the situation they're in right now is they have all the room in the world to make moves because it's been stripped down to the studs. I mean, you don't have anything outside of a small handful of pieces on this team. 70% of this roster is going to be overturned. And yep. There's more, even though you have all the resources in the world, there's going to be more pressure to hit more hits than losses in terms of who you get, because there's so much that needs to be filled. It's not like you're one linebacker away from having a Super Bowl defense, or you're one receiver, one lineman away. You need a lot more. So the fact that you have all these holes, you need to be efficient in filling them.
Yeah. These low cost short-term moves this offseason are going to be judged. When you did it last year, you're filling out a roster. You're just trying to field a team. This year, absolutely, it means something because you can't tank again. But you know, last year's rookie class, I would say that their draft class was a success. I think Kyler Gordon is showing real promise. Jaquan Brisker is a great pick. Is Braxton Jones is your starting day one left tackle. You've got your starting punter who has played really well. You have one of your, starting edge rushers in Dominique Robinson. And you have your starting middle linebacker, Jack Sanborn, who is an undrafted player. And Elijah Hicks has been a solid contributor on special teams and filled in at safety. And we haven't even seen some of the younger offensive linemen that like Jatier Carter, Doug Kramer, Zach Thomas. We don't know. I mean, if any of those guys pan out, that just looks good. I think this draft class was pretty darn good, especially for having no first round pick.
Yeah. I think that people are obviously frustrated with Velus Jones, and I get it, but let's see what he can do with a full draft class with a first round pick and resources to use.
Another thing I've started to come to realize is I think Trestan Ebner's not good. And
no.
And with the injury to Khalil Herbert, I'm starting to think that you might have to re-sign David Montgomery or franchise tag him for a year.
Interesting.
That way you still have him. He gets some money and you buy another year to solve that position, because you don't want to take a position of strength and make it a position of weakness while you're rebuilding.
Yeah. You know, that's really interesting. You mentioned that, because at least if you franchise tag him, you're not committing long-term, because I don't like committing long-term to running backs. But as you said, you're not missing anything. You know, you're at least knowing that that position is still solidified for another year with what you've been working with. And then you could say, all right, a year after that, you franchise tag him, you let him play. Then you go, all right, then, you know, we filled in these holes. Now we can fill in this upcoming hole, because I just can't see the Bears wanting to hang on to David Montgomery as much as I like him for a long, long time. But I do think a one-year franchise tag, I never really thought about that, but I think that makes sense.
And the franchise tag is probably going to be between 10 and 12 million, which is a lot of money.
They have the money though. That's
they have the money. And I understand. I agree. I don't think you want to sign him to a long-term deal, unless it's something, if it's like 3 year, 24 million. Yeah, I would do that. I just, but yeah, I have to consider the franchise tag on him, and because if you bring him back, you're maintaining the strength of one of the strengths of your team, which is the running game, not having to commit any of your draft resources to filling that position. Because if you get rid of David Montgomery, I think you have to spend one of your first four rounds on a running back, a draft pick. So I think that buys you time where you have another year to fill that hole.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point.
I think Khalil Herbert is a really good running back. He's still not a very good complete running back he's good at running. I don't think he's that great at receiving, and he's definitely not a good pass blocker. David Montgomery is the complete package. And I understand the reasons for not re-signing him, but I can't risk losing him for nothing.
I get what you're saying. I absolutely get what you're saying. I think it's a good way to look at it.
And I at first I was like, all right, you know, if you bring back Darrington Evans, I think he's played nicely, and you'd have Khalil Herbert being your lead back. A lot of that really predicated on Trestan Ebner taking steps forward, and I think he's not good.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's frustrating that you didn't have better depth beyond Montgomery and Herbert. I was hoping that you would have seen a little more, not necessarily to replace long-term, but at least giving you options, where I think now, like you said, it's like, well, either you have to draft someone or keep David Montgomery, because you can't rely on what you have beyond those two.
Right. And I don't like, you have a full you know, all of your draft picks for the most part. I think you're missing a sixth rounder, but you've got multiple other rounds. You've got full draft picks. You have so many holes to fill. I don't want to lose somebody over money when you have to use a draft pick or different money to plug that hole. I would rather just give him either, if he's not going to sign, a team friendly deal, you franchise tag him, pay him the 1 year, and you go from there, and gives you another year to solve that position.
Yeah.
But next week is Buffalo, and I don't have high hopes for that game.
There is, yeah, I mean, they did just win the division. I know that there is still seeding to play for. I'm not saying the Bears are going to win. I just don't know if they're going to come out. I could see it being similar to this week, where the Bears might not win, but it's not going to be a blowout like it could look like on the betting sheet.
It may not play out that way on the betting sheet, but there's very, very little hope that the Bears win, which is fine. Then the Bears are doubly in the driver's seat for that draft pick with just two division games left to play. You're probably going to get the best of the Lions because they're actually fighting for a playoff spot.
Yeah. So that can help us with our losing brigade.
And then it comes down to that Vikings game, which, man, I was really hoping for them to lose because then it made the Colts have another win, which is good for the Bears, and the Vikings have another loss, with the 49ers breathing down their neck. That's what I was hoping for. But
yeah, me too.
You know, they don't have something to play for. And then, I don't want the Bears to just pull out a sloppy win against the Vikings on the last game of the season and lose like four draft spots for nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I could kind of see it, but you know what? I kind of hope start the Peterman in that final game. Honestly, if it's the final game of the season, can't you just realistically say to Justin, kid, we love you. You've shown that you're him. Get ready for next year for the final game in a meaningless season. I know Justin Fields wants to play every game, but come on. Right?
All right, absolutely. I agree, but Justin Fields, if he's healthy, he's going to play. And I don't know. That's... if nothing else, it rubs in the Vikings fans' faces what they could have had.
Yeah. Nah. Let's get good, and then we'll show them.
I want to move to baseball.
Oh, yeah.
We actually have stuff to talk about. Both teams have made moves. I want to talk White Sox first, just because I want to, I feel like, we have more Cubs talk about than the White Sox, but I want to bring them up. They signed Andrew Benintendi to the highest contract the White Sox have ever offered, which is a $75 million deal. And I don't think that was a bad signing at all.
No, not at all. They needed to fill a hole, and they filled a hole with someone that can give you some positive production.
Yeah. I mean, he balances out your lineup with his left-handed bat. He plays the corner outfield spot, which you desperately needed. I think it was a solid signing by the White Sox. And they followed it up with they signed Billy Hamilton to a minor league contract with spring training invite. And I don't have a ton of expectations of a Billy Hamilton. He still has speed. He can still play defense. I don't think that's a bad signing, especially since it's not a guaranteed roster spot.
Yeah. And I mean, for depth, it's fine. Like if you need to call somebody up or if it's late in season and you need that speedy guy down the stretch, because I still think the White Sox are going to be in a playoff race this year. I think that's good to have. There's no harm in bringing in Billy Hamilton whatsoever. And I think that you going out and getting Andrew Benintendi at least can give you some confidence that the White Sox might do a few more things to help them get better. I'm not sure they're done making any moves. I don't know if they're going to make any trades or not, big ones or any big signings, but you know, they said that after the signing of Benintendi, they're not looking to cut any more payroll. So maybe they add a little more, not a ton, but a little more. But at least that right there is saying, okay, we signed Benintendi, now we have to trade someone, because that doesn't sound like the case. And if Benintendi, you're only paying him $15 million a year. 5 years seems like a lot, but this is kind of the market we're in. And if you're going to spend less AAV, $50 million a year, that's a pretty good get.
Yeah. And the White Sox can't be done yet. They just can't be.
No.
I think they're going to try to pick the bones. I expect them to sign a veteran starting pitcher, reclamation type product. You know, kind of like they did with Johnny Cueto, maybe not Johnny Cueto, but somebody of that stature.
Corey Kluber.
I don't think that would be a bad option. To fill out as another starting option, whether or not he wins a starting job or not. I think the White Sox have that hole. I still think you need a second baseman.
Yeah, and you know what? There are some very interesting rumors that
are you gonna say trading somebody back to the White Sox?
I don't know if that's really going to happen, because we're obviously going to go forward and talk about the Cubs, and we're going to bring more why there really isn't a need for Madrigal on the Cubs, and there is a need for a second baseman on the Sox. But you know, we've heard that chatter, and I don't really see it happening. But Gene Segura is still out there. I think he'd be a fine fit for the White Sox. We talked about Gene Segura before, and it was one of those things where you say Gene Segura can't be the only move, but since they made the Benintendi move, I think you can make the Gene Segura move and be like, okay, that's a good move, because you already made a good move with Andrew Benintendi. You got yourself in Benintendi, a good average high on base guy. Now you won't feel as bad about going out and getting Gene Segura, a very solid ball player. You just didn't want him to be your only move. But you can place Gene Segura on a series of moves.
Yeah, I think they're not done. I don't know if they'll get a Liam Hendricks trade done.
That's been a big speculation, and we've speculated about it too. I do think that the White Sox do still value him greatly, especially for his leadership in the clubhouse. So it seemed more likely that they were going to trade him if the scenario was they were going to have to cut payroll or they weren't going to make any big signings. I think that the fact that they were able to sign Benintendi, they were willing to do that, maybe makes it a little less likely, not saying impossible, but a little less likely that they would go out and be inclined to trade him. Because I still think they do really like him down there, as they should. He's a good closer, and he is someone that can go out there, be relied on, and be a good leader.
I am going to say that at first I was like, well, they're going to trade him to try to fill a roster spot and not retain salary. And now I think that there's a possibility they may dump him for just that salary relief, because they did sign Benintendi to a big contract for White Sox standards. And I don't think that is anybody's driving that bus except for people whose last name rhymes with Freinsdorf.
Freinsdorf.
Because I think they might be putting the screws to the, you know, Rick Hahn, move Liam Hendricks, and for balancing the budget, because he is making a fair amount of money, $14 million or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And that coincidentally is roughly what Benintendi is getting paid a year. So, I that may still get done. I'm just less likely to bring you a major league talent and instead bringing you, minor leaguers. But who knows? Maybe they surprise us.
Yeah, we'll see. And I think that they really needed to make that Benintendi move, because now you have a left fielder who can actually cover ground, and it gives more time for Eloy to DH. And if Eloy is healthy, you know, if he hits 40 home runs, that's a key to getting back to the playoffs. So it's more than just acquiring a hole to fill. It makes your roster construction as a whole lot better. Really hard not to like this move for the Sox.
Yeah, I mean, I don't not like that move at all. I really like it. And so your roster right now, as it stands, you're looking Grandal as your catcher, Andrew Vaughn at first base. Lurie Garcia at second base.
Right now, yes.
Yoan Moncada at third, Tim Anderson at short, Benintendi in left, Luis Robert in center. Who's in right still?
Oscar Colas, if he comes up. But maybe. Even so, that's not fully set in stone yet. And so maybe Gavin Sheets.
Maybe. And then Eloy as your DH.
We're going to bring Adam Eaton back for the third time.
I wouldn't be shocked.
Could you imagine if they brought that stooge back for a third time?
But yeah, there's still got to be more moves. There has to be. They've got to bring in another outfielder and or a second baseman.
Yep.
Not absolutely. Knocking Oscar Colas, but we talk about this a lot with the White Sox, is with some amount of money, you can have build yourself a fail safe. You know, if Oscar Colas either is not ready or hits a rookie wall, struggles, you need a veteran in there to be able to play. And you don't have to break the bank, but I think you need a reasonably solid veteran.
Yeah, agreed.
And, you know, looking at your rotation, I still think you need another starting pitcher.
I agree.
I think you have too many aging veterans that you're relying on. And yeah, just too many question marks.
Yeah, I'm fully there with you, especially with Michael Kopech not being fully healthy.
I mean, you know, Cease, number one. Lynn and Giolito, 2 and 3, wherever you flip-flop those. Clevenger is your 4. And, you know, who you don't know what you have with Kopech. Reynaldo Lopez is not going to, you're not going to move him into the starting spot, I don't think. Unless you're going to try to bring up somebody from the minor leagues. Vince Velasquez is gone. I still think you need another starting pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And even if Kopech comes back, that you're going to have injuries. You're going to have people that need to skip starts. It's nice to have another starter on your roster. So you still got a lot of work you need to make if you're Rick Hahn.
Can I just make a quick comment about another Jerry Reinsdorf team?
Yes.
The Bulls just gave up 150 points to the Timberwolves.
The Timberwolves, who were missing Carl Anthony Towns and what's his name? Rudy Gobert.
150 points. We're not talking about Golden State here. We're talking about the Timberwolves without their best players.
Yeah. This Bulls team is just bad.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
But I digress. On the other side of town, the Cubs finally got a shortstop. And it was not looking very promising for a while.
No, it wasn't. And I am proud to say that I was at Wrigley Field. I was in Wrigley Field at the Winter Wonderland, right by that diamond, right by where Dansby Swanson's going to be when the news broke that they were finalizing the deal. So I like to think while I was enjoying my hot chocolate with a nice little shot of Maker's Mark in it, Jed Hoyer was on the phone working out all the details with Dansby's agent in the offices right across from Gallagher Way as the scent of waffle cones and bratwurst filled his nostrils.
So Dansby Swanson got a respectable 7 years or 6 years. No, seven years, 177.
Hey, you know what? In this market, less than 8 years and under 200 million. I think that's a pretty solid get.
Yeah. I had a friend text me. He's like, for that kind of money, you could have kept Javi Baez. And Javi Baez had a 2 WAR last year. Dansby Swanson had a 6 point something.
Right.
That's the difference. If we were getting Javi Baez, that hole in his swing is just going to continue to age poorly.
The other thing too is Javi Baez made a lot of highlight reel defensive plays. He also made a lot of errors too. Dansby Swanson is much more solidified with that.
You know, if we were getting Javi Baez when he was having, you know, the MVP caliber season, you'd go, okay, yeah, then maybe we should have. But that's not who he is anymore.
No, I mean, that was 2018, 2019. It's going to be 2023. And I'll always love Javier Baez, but yep. It's absolutely. I don't think he's going to age particularly well.
No, and, I don't think so either.
Right. And have you seen how durable Dansby, you know, knock on wood, I know things change when they come to Chicago, but Dansby Swanson has been really durable. It's another nice thing to like.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that deal ended up being fair. And I know Jed didn't want to go over 6 years, but to get him for seven, that's way better than 10 or 11 years. So you can live with that. I think, what does that put him at, like 35?
Yeah.
That's not terrible.
And I mean, when you're paying that kind of money, the way I look at it is, you know what? The value is only going to go up with that franchise. You have that sports book.
Mm-hmm.
And gambling alone, they estimated that the value is just going to go up across the board in sports because of gambling, with the mm-hmm. partnership with gambling. Mm-hmm. You're going to get the money from the TV deal. You're just going to increase in value. So pay the damn money. You're the Chicago Cubs. And Sean, I want to take this time and talk about the shortstop situation the Cubs were in. This is my take on the whole situation. What I'd like you to do is tell me if you agree or disagree with basically everything I'm about to lay out. Okay. Seem fair? Okay.
Yes.
Four shortstops were on the board. Swanson, Correa, Bogarts, Turner.
Mm-hmm.
It was rumored for a long time, for months, going even into last regular season, that the Cubs were going to land one of those guys, right?
Yes.
You and I both would agree that if we had to choose, at least between Swanson or Correa, let's be honest, we're choosing Correa, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't get the one that most people wanted in Carlos Correa. I also really liked Bogarts and Turner, but here's the deal. Those four guys. Turner was a Philly before the offseason even began. I think that was just going to happen. I don't think the Cubs were going to ever have a shot at Turner. Would you agree or disagree?
If you would have asked me before the deal was done, I would have said yes, possibly outlier possibility. But once I saw that deal signed, I went, yeah, looking back, there was probably no way that was going to happen. Hindsight, you know, being going back and seeing the clues, and probably not a chance. So we take that one off the board.
Right. So then you're left with Dansby, Correa, Xander Bogarts. I think Xander Bogarts and Correa, the Cubs made that supposed pitch to Bogarts with John Lester and David Ross, whatever that was. And that was during the winter meetings. It was also reported that the sides between Correa, so Scott Boras, and the Cubs met. And look at the deals that Bogarts and Correa were going to get over 10 years for a lot of money. To me, the way I read this, and I think it's the evidence is pretty clear when we've heard for weeks that Dansby Swanson was most likely. Once they got the terms of what they were asking for, the Cubs didn't even try, because the report was they didn't even make Correa an offer. So what I'm trying to get at here is Dansby Swanson was the guy, and he has been the guy for a while. That Dansby Swanson was the Cubs guy. And I think it's possible that because of his wedding and because of his honeymoon, this deal didn't get done sooner. Because I think after they met, the two sides met, the Cubs pretty much determined Dansby Swanson's our guy.
I can buy that. I can buy that completely.
I mean, you heard what the report said for weeks. They kept emphasizing that Dansby Swanson was the most likely guy. And here's the thing. As I said before, Correa is a better player. Xander Bogarts is a better player. But Dansby Swanson if you look at some of the statistics that are being tracked on Twitter, people are tweeting about it, writers are tweeting about it, outlets are being tweeting about it. They pointed out that with his swing and his play, if he would have played on the Cubs last year, he would have hit 33 home runs with the adjustment to Wrigley Field. So I don't think Dansby Swanson, that makes him better than Carlos Correa, but I think their argument can be made that getting Dansby Swanson means you're getting a guy that fits the team pretty well, especially with the way he plays defense, knowing that him and Nico Horner are going to be paired up the middle, because that's going to be a really good middle of the defense, middle of the infield defense.
Absolutely. You know, that's going to be, which is good because of the shift rules.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy with that. There's still a lot of room to make moves, because right now, let's talk about what, if the season were to start tomorrow, what that roster would look like.
Yeah. So your infield catcher, Yan Gomes,
mm-hmm.
first base, either Mervis or Patrick Wisdom
or Bellinger.
Or Bellinger. I would put him in center field, but that is, well, I
mean,
an option.
You could, could be that rotation where, cause you know, you have, other players that can play center field as well.
Yeah. I just think it would be more likely that it would be Mervis. If it was opening day, my bet is that Bellinger would be in center field.
Probably.
That's just my bet.
Yeah.
You might feel differently, but.
Oh, no. I hope for one game, but I'm just saying is, you know, we don't know what Matt Mervis is going to look like. I mean, what if he has a shitty spring?
Oh, yeah. We have no idea. He is far from being a lock to be on this roster. A lot of us are counting on it, but it's not a guarantee.
Yeah. I'm just saying is, you know, if that doesn't work out, you know, Bellinger can and has played first base. Ian Happ can and has played center field.
Right.
You know, those are, but your Yan Gomes is your catcher as it stands right now.
Mm-hmm.
Horner's your second baseman. And Swanson is your shortstop. Patrick Wisdom's your third baseman.
Either Patrick Wisdom or Morrell.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to talk more about Patrick Wisdom in a second. And then right field, Suzuki.
Mm-hmm.
Center field, Bellinger. And left field, Happ.
Yep.
And then you've got Madrigal. That's, I guess, a very limited utility man.
I wouldn't even call him a utility man. I'd just say pinch hit base, pinch runner, pinch hitter. At this point, if he's still on the roster, he can only play second base.
Yeah. And you got Morrell and McKinstry. And Alfonso Rivas. I was actually wanted to bring this up. And then right before we went on, I saw, cause there was rumors that the Cubs were linked to Justin Turner.
Yeah. And he's going to the Red Sox.
And he's going to the Red Sox. And I was going to say, that I don't like the idea of the Cubs bringing in Justin Turner. As much as I think the Cubs can and eventually should upgrade over Patrick Wisdom, the fact that Patrick Wisdom is a heck of a lot cheaper and younger and a better power hitter than Justin Turner. I would much rather I would much rather stick with Patrick Wisdom than Justin Turner. And Justin Turner just got a lot of money. $15 million with a player option for $8 million next year. That's solid money for a guy that's, God, was he like 37?
38.
Yeah. That's a lot of money for a third baseman that old.
I think they're going to try to go after a few other guys.
Yeah. Justin Turner was not, you've got to be able to sell me that whoever you're bringing in is better than Patrick Wisdom. And listen, I know Patrick Wisdom has holes in his game, but he's a corner infielder that has power, and he's a respectable third baseman fielder wise.
I would have been okay with Justin Turner, but clearly not meant to be. I think they could. There are two other guys that they're particularly focusing on. One guy who we thought had no chance in hell to sign with the Cubs. Another that always kind of made sense. I think that there is plenty of linking that we've seen to Michael Conforto. And we said it wasn't the right fit, but we can look at it again and say, well, it's risky. I don't know, but you don't have a solidified DH.
No, you don't.
It's the fact that he took last year off.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how productive he'd be, but you know, his resume is pretty good. And if you got him at a short deal, it's hard to not be intrigued by that.
I would not, if you can get him for a short deal, I'm not going to be mad about it. Because you're right, at this point, who is your DH?
Could have been Willie, but you know, now he's going to murder us as a Cardinal.
Even if that guy bats 100 this year, he's going to bat 450 versus the Cubs.
Oh, absolutely. No question.
Looking at the where they are, I mean, if Nicky Two Strikes figures out his swing, is he an option for DH if you can't find anybody else?
Oh,
is he?
No.
Okay.
I don't want a slappy hitter as my DH. I want someone that can hit the ball out of the ballpark.
But as it stands, then our DHs are either Alfonso Rivas
or Nick Madrigal
or Christopher Morel.
Or Christopher Morel.
I don't love any of those options at DH. But I'm also very concerned about catcher. Nothing against Yan Gomes, but he's a backup catcher.
I'm going to say this. I think they've really botched this catcher situation.
I agree. 100%.
They've really botched this because you had Omar Narvaez and Christian Vasquez, and you lost out on both of them. And
the trade for Murphy.
And the trade for Murphy. And
like that trade value was not insane.
No, it's not. And now you might have to settle for Tucker Barnhart, who a few years ago, I'd say, yeah, that's a solid get. But he really struggled last year, both offensively and defensively. He's won 2 gold gloves in his career, but last year he really struggled defensively and he's over that 30 hump. So I don't know. And you know what? Austin Hedges can't hit a lick, but he's a really good defender. There's still time maybe to make a move, maybe a surprise move. Maybe they make a trade. You know, maybe they go to the Mets and make a trade. Maybe they get Tucker Barnhart and he ends up playing a little better, more like he did a few years ago with the Reds. But I think they've really botched this one so far.
So what you're saying is that you want the Cubs to trade for James McCann?
No. No. And let me say this too. Gary Sanchez, if you're going to part ways with Wilson Contreras and end up signing Gary Sanchez to be your catcher, I'm going to be sick. If you sign Gary Sanchez to be your DH, okay, maybe that's a little different. But to be your catcher, a guy who's even worse, that'd be so ass backwards.
From a team building perspective and a fan relations, public relations perspective, you needed to replace Wilson Contreras with somebody good.
And yes, you're right.
And the way they botched that is it makes me feel like they were not prepared.
Right. They were so ready to move on from Wilson Contreras and make their argument for, all right, we're going to replace offense with defense. We're going to prioritize defense, because I think if you were to look at the philosophy of the Cubs right now, I think it leans very run prevention. Think about it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Look at the rest of their defense. Ian Happ, Gold Glover. Cody Bellinger, really good center fielder. Dansby Swanson and Nico Horner up the middle. Pretty good defense right there. So, you know, they look at Wilson Contreras and say, hey, he's got a hell of an arm. But, you know, you look at the numbers, the ERA numbers with him behind the plate, and you look at some of the defensive metrics, they're not all that great. So let's go out and replace it with defense. And I think Vasquez would have been the perfect fit, because not only is he an elite defender behind the plate, but he's also a solid enough hitter where he's not like a pitcher batting. And if you would have gotten Sean Murphy, boy, would that have been huge. But they didn't.
Yeah. Tucker Barnhart.
All I can do is hope that they make they're able to get something here. And I'm really weary of Tucker Barnhart, where he is in his career. Like I said, if this was 2018, 2019, I'd feel completely different. Because you could look a few years ago, you see the Gold Gloves, you see the offensive production, not a lot of power, but in terms of hitting, he was decent. He was decent enough where you're like, okay, this guy is a good catcher behind the plate, and he's also at least not going to be useless at the plate, where if you're going off last year, it was a real struggle for him. And I don't know if he's going to bounce back or not. I really don't know, because he's not ancient, but he's not a spring chicken either. I think he's going to be 31.
This is why I can't take MLB trade rumor commenters seriously. Quote, Chicago Cubs should trade Ian Happ for James McCann straight up. The Cubs have the payroll space to do this. I mentioned James McCann as a joke. Why in the world would the Cubs do that?
I would go back to Gallagher Way, and I would buy up all the food you can there, and then just chuck it at Jed Hoyer's window if that were to happen.
Luckily,
there's some sauerkraut.
Luckily, there's some sane people responding to that guy. Multiple LOL. No, that's the dumbest trade ever. You're more likely to get J.A. Happ in return for McCann.
J.A. Happ. Who tweeted this?
This was a comment on MLB trade rumors on an article about the Cubs, Cubs catching situation.
So wait a minute. They didn't actually
No,
the trade rumors didn't tweet. It was a comment on it.
It was a comment on an article.
Okay. I was going to say that makes less sense than the sun coming alive and eating me for breakfast.
Yeah. In this article, they mentioned Patrick Mooney's linking Tucker Barnhart and Roberto Perez.
All right. Well.
But then the Cubs also brought in this week Brad Boxberger, and it's looking like they're going to re-sign Drew Smyly.
Two good moves. I really liked Drew Smyly last year. That's a depth pitching type move you make. He was good last year. Brad Boxberger was really good for the Brewers last year. And what's one thing that we've seen the Cubs do over the past years? That is getting maximum production from veteran arms in the bullpen.
And flip them at the trade deadline.
Yes. I mean, look what you've gotten even going back to 2015 when they were contenders, when you were able to bring in Trevor Cahill and Clayton Richard and Fernando Rodney. And then a few years later.
Even going back to Jesse
Chavez. Chavez, Ryan Tepera, Michael Givens, Chris Martin.
Yeah. You've had a track record here.
Look at David Robertson last year.
Yeah. But all of these moves are honestly secondary moves. You needed a marquee move to make these a not shitty. Like if you're like, oh, we brought in Jameson Taillon, Brad Boxberger, Cody Bellinger, and Drew Smyly, and those are your secondary moves to bringing in Judge or bringing in one of the four major shortstops, then you're like, thumbs up. Those are good moves. But if that's your offseason and you don't bring in a marquee free agent, then it's an abject failure on your offseason.
I agree. And I think that the Dansby Swanson move, I think that saved their offseason.
Absolutely.
It's never going to be what exactly we wanted. It's never going to be an A+, but it saved their offseason from being a disaster.
Yes. And because there's, based on the timing of the signings, if you don't sign Dansby Swanson, who else is out there that you could say save your offseason?
If you didn't get Swanson.
If you don't get Swanson, who else is out there that could save your offseason?
Like currently out there that hasn't signed? I don't think Michael Conforto would necessarily make it that.
Nope.
I don't think Trey Mancini definitely wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I think Trey Mancini, I think the Cubs are going to sign Trey Mancini. I could totally see seeing them making that move. Once you got your marquee player, you're like, okay, that's a good move, but that wasn't going to save your offseason. The truth of the matter is, if you didn't land one of those marquee shortstops, it would have been a failure.
Yeah, there's nobody left on the market that you are saying, oh yeah, this is the guy. Because Rodon is off the board, Correa is off the board,
Aaron Judge is off the board.
Benintendi, was one of the better remaining free agents at that point. So it would be Michael Conforto. I guess Michael Brantley, but he just signed today.
He just signed with the Astros. Yeah.
But
and
he's
getting older too.
Oh yeah. Was he like 36?
Yeah. Yeah. He's up there.
Trey Mancini would not be a bad pickup, but he would not save your.
Right. It would help solidify a position and give you a guy that I really, really like. I have a lot of respect for him, but Mancini will solidify and help things. He's just not going to move the needle that far.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
If the Cubs made the decision that they were going to, either Matt Mervis or platoon first base. You know, sometimes Cody Ballinger there, sometimes Patrick Wisdom, sometimes Revis, sometimes Mervis, if he doesn't work out on the full-time basis. And they brought in JD Martinez to be this, the steady DH. How do you feel?
I wanted that this offseason, but obviously that's not going to happen.
Did he sign?
With the Dodgers, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Last night.
I didn't see that.
I wanted him. I was a little bummed.
What was the damage?
It was only like a 1-year deal.
I mean, then yeah, Mancini might be your best option at DH. Oof.
I would say go out and get Mancini and Conforto. If you get those two, then you can look at the Cubs and be like, you know what? It ain't a great team, but it can be one that can at least compete. Because here's the thing. If you look at the Cubs last year, one of their big issues was driving the ball out of the ballpark and hitting with runners in scoring position. But they weren't completely useless when it came to getting on base. Like, they were able to get on. They were an elite on base team, but that lineup was far from murderer's row. Very, very far from murderer's row. But if you would have looked at that lineup on paper and you could have seen how they could have done, you could have seen it being much worse. So the big problem, the biggest problem here is that you haven't replaced Wilson Contreras. Yeah, you brought in Dansby Swanson, but you haven't replaced Wilson Contreras. If you were to get Michael Conforto and he was able to produce around where he did in his career, and you get in Mancini that can maybe hit you 20 home runs or at least 15 and hit at an okay average OBP slug, you know, like a 109 WRC plus, then you're like, you know, it's not awful. It's not great, but it's not awful. Then maybe like you could say, okay, you could build into the future with that. And, you know, hopefully some of your prospects come up within the next few years that boost you up even further. You make more signings that'll boost you up further. But what you hope for is an improved lineup from last year and one that can at least compete, even though we know that this isn't a World Series competing team, even if they do make those moves.
But does Michael Conforto, is he willing to play DH? Because you've got your outfield.
If they offer him a job and no one else is offering him what he wants, right?
I mean, honestly, Mancini can fill that dual role of first base or DH.
Right.
Which is nice, because I think you're more of a need of first baseman than you are an outfielder. And as security in case Mervis is not who we hoped. I don't want to put so much emphasis on him, but in Trey Mancini has averaged 27 home runs a year.
Yeah. He's got some pop. I think he's a nice fit for the Cubs.
So I think that's, and he seems like a good dude.
Oh yeah. I really like Trey Mancini.
But if you couple 27 home runs a year with whatever Dansby Swanson's going to give you, plus what Wisdom's going to give you, if you can get 20 home runs from Cody Ballinger, that's a big if, but I think it's doable. That makes the Cubs that much better because they sorely lacked in power last year.
Yes, and that was a big problem.
And that more than makes up for losing Wilson Contreras at the plate.
Yeah, he was he was second in home runs behind Patrick Wisdom for you last year. So that's power that you lost, which hopefully you can get some of that with Dansby Swanson.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you get 25 home runs from him, thumbs up. But yeah. But there's still, again, there's still work to do. And I hope Jed realizes that there's a lot of work still to do.
Oh, there's tons of work to do. That's an understatement.
I don't know. Everything else, the Bulls are awful.
The Blackhawks are down 7-1.
They are terrible. But let me tell you the one thing about the Blackhawks. They have now moved to the worst record in the NHL, meaning they have the highest odds at this point of getting our future number one pick.
Yeah, that's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, so we at this, if this draft were to happen today, the lottery would happen today, the Blackhawks would have an 18.5% chance of getting Connor Bedard.
There's right now, in terms of like the team itself for the Blackhawks, there's really nothing to watch.
No, they're so bad.
It's not, and Reichel is up and down, and your other prospects are still in the lower levels. So it's not like you're sitting and watching, you know, a lot of your top prospects play. You're watching just dudes.
Like really, it is just dudes.
Right. They're just dudes. They're warm bodies to be on a roster.
It's tough to watch. It's tough to watch. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think I've said my piece because I don't want to say anything more about the Hawks or the Bulls.
Oh, I'm so annoyed. The Blackhawks are what they are. The Bulls, we have more expectations of, and they just are failing miserably.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't even like bad luck. This is straight out disastrous.
This is really, you know, almost worst case scenario for them.
Yeah. And remember, too, it is a protected pick, but we don't know where the Bulls are going to finish. So you might not even have a first-round pick.
Yeah, it is not shaping up to have a first-round pick unless they win that draft lottery. I think it's top four protected.
Okay, so Sean Hopman is going to travel to both the NHL and NBA draft. He is going to sneak in his Hamburglar outfit. He is going to take all the ping pong balls, take a Sharpie, scratch out every team name, and just put Blackhawks and Bulls in each one.
The Blackhawks so far have gotten all three of the first top three picks. How did that happen?
I don't know. Every time we draw, it just says Blackhawks.
And then you just hear in the background, rubble, rubble.
Yeah, and remember, this is a scenario where you want to use a Sharpie, not Ding Dong George's purple crayon. It's not going to cross out the other name.
We can clearly see that this says the Detroit Pistons under this green crayon or purple crayon. What happened here?
I don't know, but it says Bulls.
But that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. That's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, ShyFanPat2 on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Lynn. What a lucky break. The good Lord wants the Cubs to win.
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win. Cubs win. Cubs win.
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to negative 7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.